Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shoplogia.org. Shop L-O-G-I-A.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shoplogia.org. Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shoplogia.org.
We're spending billions of dollars. We are still no closer to defeating our enemy.
20 detainees recognize that photo.
No birth certificate, no cell phone, you guys are ghosts.
He's right in the inner circle.
The whole world's gonna want in on this.
I want targets.
Where was the last time you saw Bin Laden?
Oh my God, is that what I think it is?
Where was the last time you saw Bin Laden?
Well, that's the trailer from the movie Zero Dark Thirty. It's gotten a lot of awards, a lot of attention, and of course with a story, a very recent story, but a story behind it, like the killing of Osama bin Laden by SEAL Team 6, you say, it can't lose. The story itself, it tells itself. The movie practically makes itself. Joining us to review Zero Dark 30 for the next few minutes of Issues, Etc., Pastor Jonathan Fisk, pastor for Witness and Youth at Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois, host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting, and author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. Jonathan, welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Do you learn anything in watching this movie about this, the real story behind the movie?
I guess that would probably depend on who you ask. I kind of searched in vain in the credits. I didn't mean to say through the whole credits, but in the credits and early in the movie for some tip-off. Is this really, truly the true story or not? And I think the idea, at least as the movie is pitched, is that this is a lot of the true story. But at the same time, it's filmmaking, right? How much of this is real and how much isn't? So my answer to your question is I have no idea. I know how it might have happened now, and I think I have some insight into how lucky we were, if you want to call it a good thing that we even got him. You know, it was some random chances and breaks, and that maybe even is where the movie then, in a sense, does not do a great job of answering questions. I was thinking about that last night again. The final break that they get, which really, after all these years of not being able to track him down, allows them to track down this courier that bin Laden is using, they never tell you how they get that break. This one guy who you kind of see in and out of the movie as a CIA guy just suddenly shows up with a cell phone that somehow can track bin Laden's messenger. And we're like, oh, okay, you know, you just accept it in the movie, but then you're like, wait a minute, how did he get that thing? And that's pretty high-end piece of information. So I have no idea, honestly.
Okay. Since we don't and probably never will know all the details of the real story, and that's what these kind of operations are kind of are, they're secret, and most of them remain secret even after they're carried out in the public. Is it a good story?
It was a good story. It was compelling. The movie is told largely around the perspective of this young CIA agent, a lady. I can't remember the actress' name. I don't have my iPad in front of me to look it up. But she's played. She's an actress. She's got red hair and comes off as sort of the damsel initially. And yet you see her growth as an individual struggling to wrestle with the loss of human life at 9/11, the loss of human life through her friends who are other agents that are killed or lose their jobs in various ways from political events throughout the thing. And she becomes something of an avenging angel who her only purpose in life is to achieve this goal. And in that sense, she's even a tragic figure. And we can talk more about that at the end, some of the last shots of the movie. Her character is, you have a lot of empathy for her. Played very well, acted very well, And so her individual character carries the story, which then, as you said in your introduction, there's just so much neato-skeeto spy cloak and dagger stuff going on in this that you want to watch it. It pushes it forward. You start off in these concentration camps for the detainees, which we all know from the Bush years, received a lot of skepticism after his administration, and you end up with SEAL Team 6 flying in stealth helicopters. I mean, if you're a military junkie, this movie's got everything for you. Much more so even than, and I lost the name of the movie that was this summer, which used the real military troops to film it. Zero Dark Thirty is significantly more entertaining than that one was.
Okay, what, first of all, what themes do you find in this? Now, you mentioned the main female character as a tragic figure. What themes do you find in there that interest you from a Christian worldview?
Sin and fall, really, and that is the question that is never answered for you with this character. She becomes, again, one seeking vengeance, justifiably so, and yet does this really achieve what she wants it to achieve? When it's all said and done, who is she and what does she have left? She's defeated her enemies, but she's all by herself, alone on a plane, with nowhere to go, no one who she knows, and her only purpose in life, which was killing a man, achieved. Now, that as a Christian, that interests me not because it's something I want to pursue, but because it's something, and I think this is fair to say in literature and movie for a long time, that idea of reciprocity or vengeance and fall of individuals is something that human nature does pursue. We are tempted to pursue this daily in small actions and over the course of life in feuds and war. And so to ask the question, what does this do to the person? What does this do to the soul? The need to bring about justice by our own hands and deeds. Does it actually free us? Does it bring us happiness? Or does it just leave us having won, but all alone now? And I think that is kind of the thing about sin. Sin is the temptation to pursue justice at any cost, but justice for self, justice for selfish ends. And what does it ultimately do to you, the individual? You are tempted to pursue your anger, to pursue your lust, to pursue your show of right. And if you really do manage to win, who are you? You're the victor on top of a hill of enemies you've destroyed, and you have nothing. And you know the famous lines from Lucifer in Paradise Lost: "Better to rule in hell than serve in heaven." It's kind of that kind of question. Now, I don't know that the movie intentionally was wrestling with that, but it is what I took from it, and I found fascinating. I think it's a question for our entire nation. I still remember when Bin Laden was shot, when this all came out, and you know, there's people cheering in the streets. And you know, I was no fan of 9/11, and don't get me wrong, and the guy clearly is no fan of America and presented a threat to our nation, our sovereignty, and so forth. But I don't know that I could get up and cheer in the streets. What does that mean for the soul of our country? And those kind of questions I think the movie does, maybe inadvertently, but does wrestle with.
How does it depict, since it is depicting the military and in some sense, men who sacrifice not just potentially their lives, but also, I think, in doing what they do, a bit of their conscience, if not all of it, in certain circumstances. How does that depict the men who carried out the operation?
Yeah, well, it depicted them as soldiers, elite squad they were good boys. That's kind of the best way I can say it. These are the guys who, for king and country, are out there doing what needs to be done, and in the best sense, not losing their souls over this, but not exactly loving it either, and struggling with it. Kind of tired. One of the early scenes, and you don't really see this, the military group, until near the end, but one of the earliest scenes with them, they're complaining about things they've had to do in the past for political reasons that basically were shams, and yet they lost good men over it. So if anything, you see their brotherhood and their concern that they're ultimately fighting for nothing and losing good lives for nothing, and yet they're willing to do what needs to be done and do the right thing. And really, the the shooting of their attack on the compound is some of the best military film that I've seen since, you know, Platoon. It's very short. It's not the entirety of the movie, but it really is pretty cool, and I think they do a good job cinematography-wise with that. But they don't get too into the character development of these troops, though. Although, again, golly, they wrestle with, there's one guy, and this is one of the things that didn't make sense. There's one guy who seems to be working for the CIA who suddenly is in the elite SEAL team. It's the same actor who is ethnically Middle Eastern. But it does set up, and you never know why he is suddenly in the SEAL team, but it does set up this really interesting moment where he is seen. The townspeople around coming out to see what's going on, and it's almost like he's questioning, not his loyalties, but he's afraid for his own people, and he ends up breaking character a little bit, not in terms of his character in the movie, but in terms of his role as a military person to try to stop these people from coming too close and end up getting hurt. So there's things like that, and there's a lot of those things where it's like these individual characters are developed very quickly and very shortly, and then don't come back again, but it's not like it's all bad. But it's hard to really say you're focused on any one of them. It's like all these little vignettes of character, and in each case, it's character wrestling with suffering, character wrestling with sin, character wrestling with vengeance and reciprocity. It's a fascinating film, and to pull it off, I mean, really to pull it off in the time that they've had to pull it off in terms of the turnaround from what, 2 years ago. I mean, it really is something else.
With only about a minute here, and finally. Any pastoral concerns about things that might offend the Christian conscience in the film?
Sure. Well, they did a pretty good job of hiding any sort of grotesque, bloody violence. As a military film, I mean, there is some shooting going on, and you're still wrestling with these ideas. I mean, Osama bin Laden is in a room with his two wives and his three kids, and you're seeing these kids screaming and crying. So, you know, if you got the queasy stomach for any type of violence, you certainly don't want to go into this one. I think the bigger question is the one of if this is America. Right. If this is who we are as the United States, we're a country who can give everything we have to killing one man, yay for us. What does it mean to be a Christian in that country now? Is this my father's homeland? And again, the final scene of the movie with this main character, she's almost like Lady Liberty having been defiled, not by sexuality. She's abandoned her sexuality for the sake of vengeance. And oh man, it's a potent moment. That's my concern for Christians is who are we in this country now? Is this our country? Can we call it a Christian country? And if not, then what is our purpose or our need or our duty as citizens and as members of the church?
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor for Witness and Youth at Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois. He's host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting, and he's author of the book Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often As Possible. You'll find it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah, sure thing.
When we come back, we're going to talk about evangelical voters and Mitt Romney's loss. John West will be our guest. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas. Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky. And St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.thecLCC.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to thecLCC.org.
Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shoplogia.org. Shop L-O-G-I-A.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shoplogia.org. Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shoplogia.org.